Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Council OKs Lowering Water Rate, Retroactive Credit, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council on Tuesday approved lowering the rate for the top tier of the city's water system and providing a retroactive credit to customers going back to July 1st. The change applies only to the fifth tier of the city's water rate, which is for gallons used above 50,000. The new rate is $13.50 per 1,000 gallons after the first 2,000 gallons, compared to the previous rate of $19.65. Council members said during Tuesday's meeting, the change is meant to provide relief for businesses that were negatively affected by water meter upgrades. The updated meters are more sensitive, council members said, and some businesses experienced a jump in reported usage after new meters were installed. The new rate could mean significant savings for customers using more than 50,000 gallons of water. For example, a customer using 50,001 gallons of water would be charged $943.21 under the old rate and $648.01 with the new rate. Customers will also be credited for what they were charged above the new rate going back to July 1st, according to a copy of the city ordinance. Utility staff is impressed with the accuracy of the new meters and that they have not only led to quantifying the exact water being consumed by our customers, but that we can lower the rate for a revenue-neutral system, a supporting document for the ordinance states. But while commercial properties and businesses that use a large volume of water could see savings, council members said it's unlikely residents will see a difference in their water bills unless their properties are experiencing a leak that's causing them to use more than 50,000 gallons of water. The current water rates are residential base rate $21.61, second tier 2001 to 10,000 gallons $6.11 per 1,000 gallons after the first 2,000. Third tier 10,001 to 25,000 gallons $8.03 per 1,000 gallons after the first 2,000. Fourth tier above 25,000 gallons $10.80 per 1,000 gallons after the first 2,000. And the fifth tier above 50,000 gallons, $13.50 per 1,000 gallons after the first 2,000. This article is entitled, Pioneer Natural Resources Lays Off 300 Across Irving Permian Operations, by Dom DiFurio, Dallas Morning News. Irving-based Pioneer Natural Resources laid off about 300 employees Tuesday as the oil market continues to suffer amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. The affected employees were evenly split between Pioneer's Irving corporate office and its Permian Basin operations, according to the company. Spokesman Tad Owens told the Dallas Morning News that laid-off workers will receive severance packages that include 1.5 times their base annual salary, $24,000 in a medical health care stipend, and pro rata vesting of existing stock awards. Global oil prices have seen some gains since reaching all-time lows as countries across the world shut down their economies earlier this year to stem the spread of the pandemic. And oil prices are expected to continue to struggle in the fourth quarter as demand remains low. Pioneer reported a second quarter net loss of $439 million for the three-month period ending June 30th and free cash flow of $165 million. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This article is entitled Midland Memorial Hospital CEO Myers, Unique Treatment Part of Trump's Care at Walter Reed, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday two of three medicines that President Donald Trump received during his fight with coronavirus are available to those at Midland Memorial. The other, Regeneron, is an experimental medication that is not available to anyone at this point, Myers said. It was uniquely available to the president under a compassionate use, he said. The Washington Post reported this week that the president is taking the vaccine-like drug made by Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. The Post article states, quote, many experts view the drug as the best bet to stymie the coronavirus and transform it from a potentially lethal disease into a treatable illness. Regeneron announced last week that its drug appeared effective against the virus, relieving symptoms when given to people recently diagnosed with COVID-19, according to the Post article. We assume that at some point it will be available to a wider audience, but we're not near that point, Myers said. Myers said the president also received the antiviral remdesivir and dexamethasone, a steroid treatment. Both those treatments are available to a larger audience, although dexamethasone is not typically given as early as it was given to the president, if I've understood that correctly. It's usually reserved for patients who are a little bit more severely ill and on a ventilator. Remdesivir is something that's been readily available to us for a while. Our clinicians are using it for our patients. Myers said during his weekly press conference that it is certainly a relief that the president's health is improving and that he benefited from great medical care. The intensive presence of caregivers and special treatment that's available at Walter Reed to the chief executive. Myers said the most important thing he took away from the events of the last week are the same things that Midland health officials have talked about from the beginning of the pandemic. The importance of social distancing, of proper hand hygiene, of wearing face coverings, of avoiding crowds, and of avoiding close talk. He said the president's coronavirus case is a reminder to not rely on or be complacent about negative test results. You still need to wear your mask, wash your hands, stay out of crowds, and avoid close contacts for an extended period of time, Myers said. All of those things have worked to stem the spread of the virus. And when they're not done, especially with crowds of people who are not known well to each other, bad things can happen. This article is entitled Surreal. Midland pastor says he never expected to be target of Chinese billionaire, by Caitlin Randall. Midland pastor Bob Fu, who received political asylum in the U.S. following persecution in China, said he was shocked to learn an exiled Chinese billionaire had accused him of being a spy for the Chinese Communist Party. Fu and his family were evacuated from their home Monday morning and moved to a safe location after a group of about 50 protesters arrived on a bus outside their residence. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said during a press conference that afternoon that local and federal authorities were investigating alleged threats on Fu's life. In an interview with the Reporter Telegram, Fu said he was being targeted by Chinese businessman Miles Guo, who recently made headlines as the owner of the yacht Steve Bannon was arrested on when he was in charge in the Build the Wall scheme. Guo, who also goes by the name Miles Kwok and Guo Wengu, established GTV Media Group after fleeing China following bribery charges. Bannon, up until his arrest, was the director of the company, which markets itself as a news organization exposing corruption within the Chinese government. However, Guo's status as a whistleblower has come under scrutiny, and he is currently the subject of a federal fraud investigation, according to news reports. On the GTV website, Guo has accused Fu of being a fake priest, a spy for the Chinese Communist Party, and the leader of a human trafficking ring. Why Guo has launched a campaign against Fu is a mystery, especially to Fu. It's like a roller coaster, Fu said at the last week in a phone interview from an undisclosed location. We never imagined this would happen in a West Texas city. Fu first became aware of the allegations against him last Saturday when a handful of protesters came to his home, he said. Those demonstrations escalated Monday morning when a much larger group arrived with signs and pamphlets that they passed out to Foo's neighbors and left on car windshields. When interviewed by reporters, the protesters declined to provide their names and denied being members of any organization. Foo said he believes they were either followers of Guo or actors paid to harass his family. Guo has posted several videos to GTV's social media pages exposing Foo and others he claims are working with the Chinese Communist Party. English subtitles of some of the videos provided by China Aid, a non-profit founded by Foo, show Guo telling his followers about a global kill cheaters campaign, which includes Foo. "We will fully support our comrades who take actions to kill those cheaters," Guo says in one video, according to the subtitles. The accuracy of the subtitles was verified for the Reporter Telegram by a third-party Mandarin speaker. In another video, Guo refers to those he has launched campaigns against and allegedly says, "How can we kill Chinese Communist Party if we cannot kill them first?" Foo said he's never met Guo and believes he might be a target because of his work with China Aid, which provides legal assistance to Christians who have been arrested in China. There are estimated to be over 1 million people from religious or ethnic minorities currently in Chinese internment camps. The alleged threats against Foo are being investigated by the FBI and CIA, Peyton said Monday. "I think this is a wake-up call for us," Foo said, "knowing that we need to be vigilant and not take our freedom for granted." Foo thanked Midlanders for supporting him and said he and his family are safe. For those who have asked how to help, he urged community members to learn more about the Chinese Communist Party and persecution by the Chinese government. The China Aid office has been closed as a precaution, but staff are continuing to work remotely, Foo said. This article is entitled "Midland County Tops 4,000 COVID-19 Cases," from staff reports. Midland County became the 27th county in the state to top 4,000 coronavirus cases on Tuesday, according to statistics from Midland Health Department and Department of State Health Services. The Health Department reported another 48 cases Tuesday. That brought the total number of cases this week to 92, which is less than the 150 through Tuesday last week, but higher than previous weeks. During the pandemic, there have been 4,035 Midland County residents test positive for coronavirus. Of those, 909 are isolated cases, according to the Health Department. There are also reported 1,304 active cases, an increase of 42 compared to Monday, and 2,428 recoveries, an increase of 6. Tuesday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Monday, the city reported. During the pandemic, there have also been 85 COVID-19 related deaths. Cases: Monday 44, Tuesday 48. Total this week 92. Total through Tuesday last week 150. Total through Tuesday 2 weeks ago 63. Total through Tuesday 3 weeks ago 54. Total during the pandemic, 4,035. This article is entitled "Virus Patients at Midland Memorial Hospital Spike to 25. Percentage of Total Population Creeps Closer to 15% Mark," by Stuart Doreen. The number of coronavirus patients at Midland Memorial Hospital has jumped from 7 to 25 in the last 2 weeks, according to Midland Health CEO Russell Myers. Myers said Tuesday during his weekly press conference that the hospital, quote, had a significant spike, unquote, over the weekend. The hospital's COVID-19 population includes 10 from outside Midland County. "As we understand, there has been some period through the weekend when hospitals in Lubbock were on diversion status," Myers said. "And so we've gotten more transfers, more patients moved to us than we're accustomed to. There are 6 COVID patients in the critical care unit, up from 3 2 weeks ago. The age range of those patients are from the 50s to the 70s. The age range of the 19 patients in the COVID unit, there were 4 2 weeks ago, are from the 20s to the 90s. There are 6 employees known to be COVID positive, according to Myers, and 25 total employees with some level of exposure. Myers said the total census was 181, which means the hospital has been pretty busy. And it also means that COVID patients make up 13.8% of the hospital's total census. In September, Governor Greg Abbott said the state will allow most businesses to reopen at 75% of their maximum occupancy in those regions where COVID patients make up less than 15% of the total number of people hospitalized. Myers said the number of people receiving tests from Midland Health is again around 600 a week, and the percentage of those testing positive remains around 11.5%. Midland Health is down to one testing site, which is located at its West Campus. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. Arnulfo C. Garcia. Arnulfo C. Garcia, 87, was born January 2, 1933, to Eulogia Cortez Garcia and Paz Garcia in Vado, New Mexico. He is preceded in death by his parents and sisters, Emilia Garcia and Andrea Garcia. He is survived by his wife, Yolanda Garcia, of 63 years, and sons Alfredo Garcia, Arnulfo Garcia Jr., Corina, Andres Garcia, Laura, daughters Rachel Lopez, Patricia Gomez, Peter, Beatriz Gonzalez, Joe, Sylvia Ramirez, Sammy, and Alicia Parker, Greg. He also leaves behind 27 grandchildren, 45 great-grandchildren, and 4 great-great-grandchildren. One sister, Adelina Jimenez of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and 2 brothers, Arturo Garcia, Maria, and Armando Garcia. One sister-in-law, Maria Ethel Huerto, Antonio, and many nieces, nephews, cousins, and longtime friends. Viewing will be held Wednesday, October 7th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Thursday, October 8th, at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine, Midland. Interment will be held October 12th at 9 a.m., Fort Bliss National Cemetery, El Paso, Texas. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Billy June Netherland. Billy June Netherland, 77, born November 17, 1942, of Midland. Billy was welcomed into heaven in the arms of Jesus on Saturday, October 3, 2020, and was surrounded by loved ones at her home. She was preceded in death by her loving husband of 52 years, Bill Netherland Sr., her parents Cecil Phillips and Pat and Charles Coker, her sister Jackie Hamilton, and her brother Truman Phillips. Visitation will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Thursday evening, October 8th, 6 to 8 p.m. Funeral services will be held at Kelview Heights Baptist Church on Friday, October 9th at 10 a.m. Pastor Jeff Franklin will be officiating the services. Billy is survived by her children, Kelly Netherland, Haas Netherland, and wife Jennifer, Lori Rose and husband Paul, Paul Netherland and wife Marcy, Johnny Netherland and wife Becky, Tommy Netherland and wife Roxanne, 17 grandchildren. She is also survived by her sister, Maylene Hilbin, and husband Al, and also survived by many great-grandchildren and one great-granddaughter to be here soon, and many loving nieces and nephews. Fabian Esquivel. With deepest sorrow, we announce that Fabian Esquivel, age 28, a beloved husband, father, son, brother, family member, and friend of Midland, Texas, and formerly of Big Lake, Texas, passed away suddenly on October 3rd, 2020. Our rosary will begin at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, October 7th at the branch at NPW, next door to the funeral home. Memorial service will follow immediately after the completion of the rosary. Fabian was born on September 24, 1992 in San Angelo, Texas, to Ubaldo Esquivel and Griselda Rivera. Fabian is survived by his wife, Jacqueline Esquivel, his children, Yamilet, Bethany, Octavian, and Liliana, his mother, Griselda Rivera, his maternal grandparents, Pete Vargas and Susan Cimental, siblings, Aida, Daniela, Yasmin, Ubaldo Jr., Maria, and Ruby, and many nieces and nephews. He is survived in death by his father. He is preceded in death by his father, Ubaldo Esquivel, and paternal grandparents, Jesus Esquivel and Petra Esquivel Gonzalez. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. The family would like to express their gratitude for their kindness and compassion. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mary Lopez. Mary Lopez, 64, of Carlsbad, New Mexico, passed away October 4th, 2020, at home, surrounded by her family. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 7th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, October 8th, at San Miguel Arcangel Catholic Church in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 12:30 p.m. Friday, October 9th, at Santa Catarina Cemetery in Carlsbad, New Mexico. Mary was born on June 25, 1956, in Carlsbad, New Mexico, to Esther Juarez and Elias Hernandez. Mary is survived by her daughter, Catarina Hernandez, and husband, Pedro Sotelo of Midland, daughter, Crystal Lopez Casares, and husband, Matthew Casares of O'Donnell, Texas, son, Eloy Lopez, and wife, Tessa McMillan of Carlsbad, sisters, Juanita Granger of Hobbs, Lorenza Hernandez of Carlsbad, and Rosa Leos of Murrieta, California. 12 grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. Maria is preceded in death by her husband, Eli O.U. Lopez Sr., parents Esther and Elias Hernandez, stepfather Conrado Gutierrez, and brothers Vicente Hernandez and Gregorio Hernandez. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Hands of Compassion and Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Zona Elise Childers. Zona Elise Childers, 66, of Midland, Texas, died peacefully on Saturday, October 3, 2020, surrounded by her loving family. Graveside services will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Thursday, October 8th at 3 p.m. Elise is survived by her mother, Brooksy Salmon of Midland, sister Joan Blair of Midland, brother Carrie Blair of Midland, nephew Joey Blair of San Antonio, nephew Daniel Blair of San Antonio, nephew and wife Chris and Tabitha Blair of Denton, and two beautiful great nieces, Brooksy Blair of San Antonio and Peyton Blair of Denton. Elise will be laid to rest beside her favorite person in the world, her father, Joseph Salmon, who resided in Midland, Texas. The family would like to thank the staff at hospice who made things extremely easy during this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Royce Marriott. Royce Marriott, 82, of Midland, passed away October 2, 2020. The family will receive guests from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, October 11th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, October 12th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. Doing good. Under the photo, the caption reads, Travis Magnet, School Nutrition Manager, Margaret Rodriguez poses for a photo last Wednesday. Rodriguez won the School Nutrition Employee of the Year Award from Ector County ISD. Veteran Food Service Manager snags honor by Ruth Campbell. Now in her 28th year with Ector County ISD, Margaret Rodriguez still loves what she does. The school nutrition manager at Travis Elementary School, Rodriguez won the School Nutrition Employee of the Year Award from the district. I was surprised, Rodriguez said, of the recognition. I was very surprised, and I know my principal, Amy Russell, had a lot to do with it too, because she had mentioned that she had nominated me. Rodriguez supervisor, Bay Kirby, who has logged 32 years, said Rodriguez is very deserving of the recognition. She's compassionate and she cares about making sure the kids in Ector County are fed good, nutritious meals. She takes a lot of pride in what she does, Kirby said. In her job, Rodriguez predicts how much food she has to prepare for the week and orders her groceries. I've got to stay in a budget. I have to figure out how many meals I send out so that I won't have a lot of leftovers, too, so we won't have a lot of food waste, Rodriguez said. Kirby said Rodriguez also deals with complaints. She's kind of the in the middle between her staff at the campus and the people in the food service office, Kirby said. With adults and students, Rodriguez serves an average of 180 people a day. Before COVID-19, it was about 350. Currently, students eat in the classrooms, and the school nutrition staff delivers breakfast. Lunch is delivered in carts and is distributed individually to the students, Rodriguez said. Breakfast runs from 7:15 a.m. to 8 a.m., and lunch is served from 10:40 a.m. to 12:50 p.m. Rodriguez said her experience helped get through the transitions of feeding students in line to distributing them. She said she started off with 3 staff members, but is down to 1 now. A lot of them don't want to work because they were scared of the COVID, Kirby said. Rodriguez started at Odessa High School for 11 years, ending up as head cook. She was then manager at Gonzales for 11 years and is now in her 5th year at Travis. I used to do child care. I was a teacher's aide at a child care. I decided I wanted something different, Rodriguez said. She doesn't remember who told her to look into food service, but she started as a substitute and within just a few weeks was brought on staff. Customer service is what Rodriguez said she enjoys the most, and making sure our kids are fed. She'll step in and help out anytime it's necessary. I just feel like I do my job. I'm not here because of the pay. I'm here because I love what I do. I especially love when the kids come through the line and this is the face that they see all day long. We get to interact with them and get to know their names. They see you out in the streets. They see you at the store, Walmart, and they're telling their mom, "Look, Mom, there's the lunch lady." And you get to know them, Rodriguez said. When she tells former OHS students, for example, that she fed them at the high school, they remember her. "It's just something nice. It's awesome," she said. She also praised Kirby and said she can be open with her and with school nutrition director Brandon Reyes. "I've learned with years of experience not to be shy, to be open," she said. Rodriguez has 3 daughters and 3 granddaughters. Brown Foundation invests in OC. OA News at OAOA.com. As colleges and universities across the country work to contain COVID-19 outbreaks and protect students, faculty, and staff members, the uncertainty of how the term will play out on local campuses has left the degree-earning potential of thousands of college students hanging by a thread. The Prentice Ferrer and Alline Ford Brown Foundation, Bank of America, announced a 2-year, $1.76 million grant that will help support college students' access to basic needs at 4 West Texas higher education institutes that serve about 60,000 college students from the Panhandle through West Texas: Amarillo College, El Paso Community College, Odessa College, and South Plains Community College. The grant includes a significant investment in emergency aid for students that, in most cases, will nearly double the amount of aid available to students, a news release said. The grant is managed by Believe in Students, the nation's only nonprofit organization focused exclusively on supporting college students' living expenses. In terms of college students' financial challenges, many of us think about big dollars like tuition, Tracy Kirtley, executive director of BIS, said. But often it's a small dollar shortfall, an unexpected car repair, the inability to pay for adequate groceries, or during the pandemic, internet access. That affects a student's ability to continue their higher education journey. To get the funds to students quickly, they will distribute by Equity. Equity helps students apply for emergency aid in less than 10 minutes using an app. They receive a response in less than 24 hours and receive aid within 48 hours. This allows college staff to focus on advising and supporting students rather than pushing paperwork. "We are truly grateful for OC's inclusion in this grant. These funds will further assist our students in covering their needs during this time of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Brown Foundation's investment will help Odessa College continue to support our students in pursuit of their dreams to obtain their college education," OC President Gregory D. Williams said in a release. "Data and evidence are critical to sustaining the provision of emergency aid throughout Texas. This fall, the grant will also allow the Hope Center for College Community and Justice to field surveys to assess students' needs for emergency aid and their experiences seeking it. The Hope Center will conduct an evaluation to examine the impact of this investment in West Texas students and inform future initiatives," the release said. Also from the front page, COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,122. Ector County negative, 22,820 out of 28,272 tested, with 330 pending, 100 deaths. Recovered, 4,325. Active, 697. ECISD daily cases, 6 students, 2 staff. Midland County, 3,987 confirmed, 85 deaths. Texas, 773,435 confirmed, with 6,636,248 tested. Total Texas deaths, 16,111. U.S. cases, 7,436,278 total confirmed and 209,560 deaths. To find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tstrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntp. Quick hits. Member Appreciation Days. Southwest 66 Credit Union, SW66 Credit Union, will hold a series of Member Appreciation Days every Friday throughout the month of October to thank their members. We know times are tough for many of our members, and we want to show our appreciation and support by doing something special to show them we care. SW66 Credit Union CEO Elizabeth Newman said. SW66 Credit Union is a not-for-profit financial institution that serves those who live, work, attend school, or worship in Ector and Midland counties. Over the past few months, they've been working to help those affected by the pandemic and wanted to come up with a new way to show their support for the community. Since International Credit Union Day takes place in October, they decided to turn the home month into a celebration for their members. Southwest 66 Credit Union Members Appreciation Days are scheduled as follows. Friday, Shred Day. Members can bring any receipt, statements, or personal documents to be disposed of safely and securely by depositing them into the secure shred bins at the credit union. October 16th, refillable water bottles. Members can drop by the credit union and pick up free SW66 credit union branded refillable water bottles while supplies last. October 23rd, Lunch on Us. The credit union will be providing free boxed lunches to members beginning at 11 a.m. until food runs out. October 30th, Halloween Treats. Members can pick up free sealed treat bags in celebration of Halloween. SW66 credit unions in Odessa are located at 1315 West University Boulevard and 4041 East 52nd Street, in Midland at 4425 West Wadley, Suite 190, Midland. Visit Southwest 66th Credit Union at www.southwest66.com. Haunted Maze, BloodyBill.com, home of DEFCON 1 and Circus of the Dead, 2015 West 2nd Street, has scheduled Bloody Bill's Chainsaw Carnage Haunt from 7 p.m. to midnight, October 23rd, 24th, 30th, and 31st. This year, in the midst of the pandemic, we're building an outdoor haunted maze on site. It'll be filled with zombie rednecks, psycho rodeo clowns, and crazed cannibals. Prices are $15 per person, or new this year, limited VIP line skip tickets for $20. Visit tinyurl.com/yxnymh9w. Fall Fest has been scheduled from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. October 24th at Grand Stadium parking lot, 801 North Loop 250, Midland. The event will include vendors, safe trick-or-treating, and food trucks. Admission is free. Visit tinyurl.com/y4gakb38. ECISD offering vaccine clinic. On Friday, Ector County ISD school nurses are hosting two vaccine clinics for 7th graders who may be missing required immunization. The clinics are from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Nimitz Middle School, located at 4900 Maple Avenue, and Ector College Prep Success Academy, located at 809 West Clements Street. DDAP and MCV4 vaccines are being offered only. Visit tinyurl.com/y2oug3vu. Kuehler endorses Hobbs. Representative Henry Kuehler, D., Texas 28, has endorsed John Mark Hogg in the race for Texas 11th Congressional District. Republican Kuehler said Texas 11th District needs an experienced voice to represent it in Congress. John Mark has served in local government and represented the interest of business, energy, and agriculture across the district for 28 years. His knowledge and experience of the area will be a valuable resource to help us represent the interest of all of Texas. It is my privilege to endorse him for Congress.
MC graduate proves that nothing is impossible. Special to the Odessa American by Travis Woodward, MC Director of Marketing and Communications. Determination, faith, perseverance, all underscore Amber Allison's journey at Midland College, MC. Her journey culminates in December when she graduates with an Associate of Applied Science degree in paralegal. She already completed her paralegal certification this past spring, 2020. For Allison, completing her education has been challenging. However, she is all about overcoming challenges, including being dyslexic, working full-time, and having an active family life. A native Midlander, Allison graduated from Lee High School in 2005, and initially attended Midland College in 2006 to pursue a business degree. That same year, she also got married. Life intervened, and she left college at age 20 to take care of the family business and start a family. While going through a divorce, Allison returned to MC in 2009 and completed the pharmacy technician program. After receiving her pharmacy tech certification, she worked for West Texas Nuclear Pharmacy at Midland Memorial Hospital and later for Luker Pharmacy. In 2015, Allison once again returned to MC to follow her dream of being a registered nurse and ultimately work at St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Sadly, that dream was crushed by a bad car accident, resulting in a tear to her spine and bulging discs. "Following the accident, I began to doubt myself," Allison said. "I thought that I was not smart enough to go back to school. I felt that way because I underestimated what I was capable of at that time." The residual pain from the accident caused Amber to reconsider her life goal. Nurses need stamina and physical endurance. "I debated for a long time about whether I should go to nursing school or go in another direction," Allison said. "I'm a big believer in lifelong learning, and I don't think there's anything wrong with changing your path." Now remarried to her husband, Bradley, mother of a 14-year-old daughter and an owner of two golden retrievers, Allison's life is back on track. "My husband kept pushing me to go back to school, and I kept putting it off," Allison said. "One day I pulled up the Midland College website, and I said, 'God, you tell me where you want me to be, not where I want to be.' There it was. The paralegal webpage was on the screen." Last semester, spring 2020, Amber served as a paralegal intern with Region 18 Education Service Center, ESC. "My internship was rough because everything was online," she explained. "I learned a lot about the state legislature. When the legislators changed the law, I had to make sure that everything was up to date in the system because all of the regions use the legal framing department." Evidently, her supervisor at Region 18 ESC were extremely impressed with her skill. This fall, Allison joined the team on a more permanent basis. Allison's drive to achieve her goals comes as no surprise to Assistant Professor of Paralegal Studies, Charity Rolfs. "I'm so proud of Amber," Rolfs said. "She never gives up, even when doors seem shut. She is motivated and detail-oriented. I know she will be an essential asset to any team she joins." What advice would Amber Allison give to students? Don't underestimate yourself. When times get hard, keep going. The path may not always be easy. Look at the light at the end of the tunnel and know that it's one step closer to your goal. Don't give up. "I started, and by the grace of God, here I am. The journey has been amazing." Local news roundup. ECSO and ICE take 11 illegal immigrants into custody. Monday afternoon, there were reportedly 11 illegal immigrants that were found and taken into custody in West Odessa. The search warrant was executed by the Ector County Sheriff's Office, ECSO, with the assistance of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, at 2:30 p.m. Monday in the 100 block of Hasty Road, an ECSO press release detailed. As the search warrant was executed, there were reportedly 11 illegal immigrants located and taken into custody. An additional 3 immigrants were located and taken into custody at Motel 6. 3 people were arrested on state charges, which are related to human trafficking or smuggling, and there are pending charges that are waiting on further investigation. Police searching for auto burglary suspect. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a man involved in an auto burglary. The reported burglary happened at 3 a.m. September 4th in the 1300 block of Copus Avenue, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that a man burglarized a blue Ford F-150. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/Y5XW3FVZ. Anyone with information about the auto burglary is asked to contact Detective J. Campbell at 432-335-3328 or Odessa Crime Stoppers 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-0015733. MCH explains visitor policy. Medical Center Hospital issued a press release Tuesday that detailed additional information about its visitor policy. The hospital is only allowing one visitor per patient under certain circumstances, which includes pediatric care, maternity care, disabled or incapacitated patients, ED patients, end-of-life situations, and ICU patients. Those visitors are only allowed during allotted visiting hours. As of Tuesday, all visitors must sign a waiver to enter, the press release stated. Waivers will be signed electronically at one of the five screener stations, which are Wheatley Stewart Starbucks entrance, Wheatley Stewart main entrance, ED entrance, main admitting entrance, and CWI entrance. After signing the waiver, a wristband will be placed on the visitor. As long as the visitor has the wristband on their wrist, they will not be required to sign an additional time. If they do not have a wristband, the visitor must sign a waiver to enter. Paper copies are also available. Visitors will continue to be screened before using the orange sticker to signal this has been done. Screening must be done once every 24 hours. Also, as of Tuesday, the ICU will allow one visitor between 1 to 3 p.m. and 8 to 10 p.m. Visitors should stay in the patient room or area at all times and should not be in hallways or common areas unless it's for specific waiting areas. Visitors should practice hand hygiene and wear a mask at all times. This doesn't include MCH's CCU, which is where most critical COVID patients are being treated. In end-of-life situations, one person is being allowed in CCU for 15 minutes with full PPE. Obituaries and death notices for Wednesday, October 7th. Mary Opal Anglin Robertson. Mary Opal Anglin Robertson was born May 17, 1942, in Abilene to Opal and George Anglin. She passed away October 3rd after emergency surgery at 78 years old. She married William Ralph Robertson in 1964. She is survived by her children, Kirk Robertson, Lisa Wyron, Becky Battershell, and Bill Robertson, Jr., her sister, Roseanne Bokelman. Mary was preceded in death by her mother and father, her brother, George, and her husband, William Bill Ralph Robertson, DVM. In lieu of flowers, consider donating to the following: LOPE, Lone Star Outreach, to place and adopt former racehorses. LOPETX.org. Visitation will be held Friday, October 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Saturday, October 10th at 9 a.m. with a reception to follow at the Barn Door South 40, 10:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. Saturday, October 10th. Burial will be at Rock Springs Cemetery, October 10th at 4:30 p.m. A celebration of life to follow at Jeff and Becky Battershell's Grace Ranch in Barksdale. Billy Ruth Wilkerson. Billy Ruth Wilkerson, 89, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, October 1st. She was born April 15th, 1931, in Eastland, to the late Emma Ann Woodall and Amasa White Shugart. She married Hildred Hotshot Wilkerson in 1952 in Carlsbad, New Mexico, and he passed away in September of 2000. Billy is survived by her sons, Paul Wilkerson and wife Penny, and Brian Wilkerson, all of Odessa, daughters Deborah Gordon and husband Doug of Salida, Colorado, and Shirley Peterson and husband David of San Antonio, five grandchildren, and five great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her husband, Hotshot Wilkerson, and a son, Jerry Don Wilkerson. Graveside services will be held Thursday, October 8th at 2 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Ray Roland Rushing. Ray Rushing passed away Friday, October 2nd in Shamrock at the age of 74. Cremation and arrangements are by Robertson Funeral Directors of Shamrock. He was born in Reno, Nevada, August 6, 1946, to Ida M. Rushing and Marvin J. Rushing. He married his wife Glenda in 1986 in Odessa. Ray was preceded in death by his father, Marvin J. Rushing, and his mother, Ida M. Rushing. He is survived by his wife, Glenda, children Amy Moore and husband Rod, Brian Rushing, Brad Rushing, and James Howie Gain. He's also survived by seven grandchildren, eight great-grandchildren, a sister Sandra Warren and her husband Ray, brother Dennis Rushing, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins, a sister-in-law Brenda Tucker of Shamrock, and special friend Janice Allen of Waterford, Michigan. Memorial and celebration to be held at a later date. Death notices. Madalano Castro Eleno Galindo. Madalano Castro Eleno Galindo, 67, of Odessa, died Friday, October 2nd. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, October 8th, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Cremation has been requested by the family as an alternate means of burial. Family and friends will be officiating. Winton Evander Dick Jones II. Winton Evander Dick Jones II, 68, died Tuesday, September 29th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Epimenio Salinas Jr. Epimenio Salinas Jr., 74, died Tuesday, October 6th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Pauline Branton Mack. Pauline Branton Mack, 78, died Wednesday, September 30th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Desi Marie O.G. Pride. Desi Marie O.G. Pride, 85, died Wednesday, September 30th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.